Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast have blown up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Monday, March 20th. I hope your brackets are intact, along with your livers, potentially, from a fun weekend out there, getting after St. Patrick's Day, March Madness, the whole thing. We got a big show today. Weirdly, Texans-heavy show today. But don't let that dissuade you from the most exciting thing, which is that we are joined by the great Scott Pianowski, our buddy. Scott, it has been a minute since I've talked to you. Honestly, it's been a minute since I've had a Yahoo native on the podcast in general. What's going on, buddy? How are things?
Good. Hanging in. It's been a couple rough weeks physically with a little seasonal allergy / sinus infection / I don't know what's going on. But spirit is good. Watched a lot of basketball, getting ready for my baseball drafts and meandering through that. And of course, keeping an eye on the 12-month NFL calendar.
Yeah, Scott is a well-adjusted person who actually pays attention to things other than the NFL for other months of the year, unlike myself, a very much well-documented, not well-adjusted person. So, Scott, I appreciate you pitching a little double duty, and I appreciate you playing hurt here, buddy. I know you have been under the weather. Producer Brett has been under the weather. So, you know, that's sports, man. Everybody's got to play less than 100%, I guess, at some point.
Right, what's the Bill Parcells line? There's a difference between being hurt and being injured. So yeah, definitely got to play hurt. And I guess you probably talked about this a long time ago. Your big news is you're moving, right?
I am moving. Yeah. I'll be, my wife and I will be picking up and moving here Memorial Day weekend, going back to Virginia, not back to the same place I'm from. We'll be living in Virginia Beach. We'll be living out of my mom's condo in Sandbridge for a month or so while we like house hunt. I mean, obviously that's an open-ended thing. We're going to house hunt there. So yeah, Scott, I'm definitely, you know, I like to ruin my life in the off season anyways by like, oh, let me just chart like 60, 70 wide receivers every year. Now, while also hosting this podcast, let me also throw a cross country move in here. So I'm going to have a busy few months here, but appreciate you asking. I am very, very excited about it. We're ready to go here. That's for sure.
I'm surprised this didn't turn into a Yahoo miniseries. You know, you courted like 5 or 6 cities that would all bid for Team Harmon to move. And, you know, we'd have a video crew on site. And maybe Austin Eckler would help you pack up. You know, he may be doing that anyway. I don't know. But
exactly right. That's what I've said is as soon as I announced that I would no longer be living in LA, Austin Eckler right afterwards, like, no, I gotta get out of here too, which is great. I appreciate it. If that trade does indeed to go down, that's one less reason for me to ever come back to this city, which I'm kidding. I'll be back in LA plenty of times, but yeah, man. So a lot going on, that's for sure. But we do have a lot that's going on in the NFL world. But before we dive into that news, I got 3 very fun announcements from Yahoo Sports. First of all, Ball Don't Lie, our new NBA podcast, launches today. You can listen to the first episode now with Vince Goodwill and his guest, Bomani Jones. Yeah, heard of that guy before. That's a pretty big fish there for your first episode. Shout out to Vince. For the seam heads out there, The Bandwagon is our new MLB podcast with Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser. The one episode kicks off Tuesday. With all of the baseball nerdiness that your heart can possibly desire. That's Ball Don't Lie and The Bandwagon. Get them wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. And third and final announcement, which is actually about this show, this very podcast will now be available for your eyeballs on YouTube starting today. Right now, if you want to see me talk for an hour, if you want to look at Scott's beautiful face, don't know why you would want to look at me, but hey, there is that. For the sickos and freaks out there, we're now podcasting in video form. Scott, that is very exciting.
Look at you, all the announcements. You're getting ready for your second career as like what, a middle school secretary or superintendent or something like that. Yeah, I felt like I was watching Ferris Bueller.
I know.
Yeah, another movie you probably haven't seen, right?
I've seen Ferris Bueller probably like 15 times.
Oh, okay.
There we go. That one is definitely one I have seen before. But yeah, I'm doing my best there. A lot of announcements to get through. But hey, Scott, let's jump right into the news here. The biggest thing over the weekend, the Cowboys acquired Brandon Cooks in a trade for a 2023 fifth round pick and a 2024 sixth round pick. This is Brandon Cooks' fifth NFL team since 2014. According to Adam Schefter, Cooks restructured his contract on Saturday so that Houston will pay $6 million of his salary this season, and the Cowboys are only on the hook for the remaining $12 million. Scott, this seems like a perfect fit to me. They've got a very complimentary wide receiver trio of CeeDee Lamb at power slot, Michael Gallup at X, and finally filling that vacated Amari Cooper flanker role is Brandon Cooks.
Love it. This fell into Dallas's lap, right? I mean, they get a player they need. The pick cost is not prohibitive. Houston's going to pick up some of the salary. Cooks is certainly not on the front nine of his career, but he's still an effective player. And the fact that he's been productive with all the kind of clown show around him in Houston just speaks to how good he is. We were all begging for a Cooks trade at the trade deadline. The NFL finally has a trade deadline of some interest after several years of nothing ever happening. They finally pushed it back. Teams got a little bit less risk averse. So we thought Cooks might get moved at the deadline. Didn't happen, but man, he doesn't even have to change states. You know, it feels like Brandon Cooks is going to play for every team before he retires, but it's just nice, you know, so often, and we're going to talk, this whole episode is about player movement and about Matt Harmon movement. And so often players go to the wrong teams, you know, they're chasing a contract, which is totally fine. You have a small window to make money, make it while you can. It's just nice to see a team, a player, it all works out. Cooks has paid his dues. He's played for a really bad football team for a couple of years. Now he gets to go to one of the four or five best teams in the NFL, one of the Super Bowl favorites, a really interesting offensive infrastructure if you're me, ecosystem if you're Matt. So it just looks like a winner for everybody here. And look, Houston maybe could have gotten more, but whatever. They get some draft capital. They do get some salary relief from Cooks. They're obviously in rebuild mold. It's going to take a couple of seasons. So it just seems like a trade that checked all the boxes, and we get more fantasy juice out of it. So I'm in favor.
What's crazy, the Brandon Cooks like movement part of it is definitely crazy, right? Because, and I know that there's like kind of a narrative that, oh, Sean Payton gave up on him, then Bill Belichick gave up on him, and Sean McVay gave up on him. This is really the first time in his career that he was not traded for like serious, serious draft capital, Brandon Cooks. And that obviously makes sense because he's right around 30. He's not coming off a super productive season, though we can kind of get into reasons why that happened. But the Patriots traded a first-round pick for him. The Rams traded a package that included a first-round pick for him. The Texans traded a second-round pick for him. This is, again, the first time really that he's been traded for, like, basically, I think the contract was probably the biggest reason that they struggled to get rid of him at the trade deadline, which is kind of weird because he signed that contract with the Texans and then was immediately like, I want out of Houston because we're rebuilding, which is, yeah, I mean, you probably should have seen that one coming, Brandon. But Dallas really needed, Scott, they needed speed, which, you know, going back and looking at Brandon Cooks for reception perception, he absolutely still has that speed. And I would argue, despite the fact, Scott, that he has been productive at every single spot in his NFL career, I think his years with Houston have actually been his best individual seasons, as in terms of like his ability to get open and create separation as a route runner in the intermediate areas, like his ability to win on out routes and dig routes, as well as like make acrobatic catches along the sideline. That's going to be a great fit for Dallas too, because we'll talk about Dak Prescott later in like our free agent winners discussion. But this offense, Mike McCarthy's offense, especially now that's going to be, you know, 100% McCarthy, not, you know, Kellen Moore plus McCarthy, it asks the quarterback to make a lot of really high degree of difficulty throws. And I think Brandon Cooks can be a guy that wins on those high degree of difficulty plays.
And let's give a guy, you talked about him bouncing around the league. Let's give him credit for fitting in different offenses and producing with less than ideal quarterback play, certainly which he did in Houston. I know he's not coming off his best season, and he does step into an age 30 season. He's getting close to the age where you get really nervous for fantasy, but I don't think age 30 is a step off point. Plus, maybe you get off a down year, maybe you get a little extra motivation. Motivation is different for players. Mm-hmm. Some people come to me and say, oh, who are the contract players I should go get? It's like, well, in the NFL, everybody's in a contract year because you can get out of just about anything. But, and even in other sports, I say, well, motivation is a variable thing. You know, for some people, coming off a bad season is motivation. For some people, you know, going to the next big contract is motivation. For some people, just to prove somebody wrong is motivation. I think Brandon Cooks getting back into a winning environment maybe puts an extra bounce in his step. And also, as I'll talk about later, I mean, it just makes me like this passing game more. I mean, this, what more could Dak Prescott want? I mean, the guy who was gobbling up all those short touchdowns is gone, and they get another piece of the passing game pie. I think Dak Prescott could be headed towards his best passing season in 2023.
Yeah, I definitely want to unpack that later. I love your point about motivation for Cooks, because those three teams that I mentioned, at least at the top, like New Orleans, contending environment, had great years there. New England, obviously, had 1 year there. Was that in 2000?
Super Bowl. Yeah, he got hurt. He got hurt in the Super Bowl. Is it Philly? The loss to Philly, the Philly special game. He tried to hurdle a defender in the first quarter.
That's right.
And got hurt, didn't play the rest of the game.
And then was with the Rams the next year and went to a Super Bowl against the Patriots. So, I mean, there's a lot of
and then, yeah, and then famously Jared Goff missed them when he was wide open for a touchdown.
Yep.
Probably the play of the game other than the Gronkowski catch.
And again, I would argue that his best years have been 2020, 2021, and 2022 in Houston, especially the last 2 years. Like, throw the stat sheet out of it last year, because we know that he was at odds with the team. I think from an individual playing perspective, he's been at his best as a more well-rounded guy, not just a deep threat, not just a speed threat in the open field. I think he's been more well-rounded the last few years. And I've always been a little bit lower on Amari Cooper than consensus, but you know, the Cowboys got so much crap, and I think they deserved to get a lot of crap for the way they handled the Amari Cooper thing. And I know they wanted him out of there for like locker room reasons, for personality reasons. They had a lot of like not on-field reasons for wanting to get rid of Amari Cooper, and you know, who knows how Cooks will fit in and stuff like that. But I would argue from like a player to player perspective, the drop off, if there is any drop off, I'm not sure there is a drop off from Amari Cooper to Brandon Cooks, who I both think are like probably number one receivers, but on the lower end of the number one receiver spectrum. I think they should get all of like, they're kind of erasing their sins, I guess, with the Cooper thing, or atoning for their sins because of what they're doing here with Cooks in another very cost controlled move. I love it. And I agree that like, there's nothing really that Dak Prescott could want at this point. Like, this offense is very well set up to fly.
This is what smart teams do. They identify winning players in losing situations, and they try to get them on the way back up. The Patriots, and I grant the Patriots did this, and many times it didn't work out, but the times that it did, Corey Dillon, Randy Moss, Rodney Harrison, you know, I'm not saying Cooks is going to be to that level. Certainly you wouldn't compare any receiver to Randy Moss with a clear head, but I love the idea of getting a winning player who's been buried in a losing situation, and maybe you get that upswing in the subsequent season.
Early fantasy thoughts on Cooks, I think, is a little difficult to parse out, just because, like, nothing, I wrote this in the free agent tracker that's up on the site, like, there's nothing that, no move they could have made, I think, outside of, you know, something crazy, like trading for Stephon Diggs or something like that, like uniting him with his brother. I don't think there's any move that Dallas could have made to dissuade me from my CeeDee Lamb enthusiasm. Like, I think he will pretty much be in the exact same spot as last year, that big slot guy. He'll get those targets, he'll get those air yards, he'll get everything that you want, because I think he's that transformative of a young talent. Parsing out the rest of it, we'll talk about Dalton Schultz officially leaving the team here in just a second. And obviously you talked about Ezekiel Elliott should let up a lot of passing, like more passing touchdowns to go that way as opposed to on the ground now that he's gone. You know, Brandon Cooks, I still have hope that maybe Michael Gallup can bounce back in his second year off an ACL tear. I think parsing the volume with those guys will be tricky. Like, where do you think Cooks will kind of slide maybe in your early fantasy rankings? Again, I know it's very, very early.
He'll be a very interesting wide receiver three.
I think that makes sense. And a guy that could win weeks just given his speed. I think him and Gallup, like tracking Gallup's offseason reports, I think he'll get a little like lost in the mix. But how healthy he is, because he really brings a lot. I'm a fan of his game as well. So I think that's a great wide receiver trio. Let's talk about the other team here. The Houston Texans. We knew that Brandon Cooks was not going to be on this roster, but they made a bevy of moves, and a few of them legitimately like 5 minutes before we started taping. But over the weekend, basically right after the Brandon Cooks trade, they gave a massive extension to left tackle Laremy Tunsil, a 3-year, $75 million extension that pays him $50 million guaranteed, $30 million signing bonus, and he's going to be paid $60 million in total guarantees. Scott, I just wanted to bring up, I know it's a, you know, it's a fantasy show. We talk real football too, but like it's a fantasy show, but Tunsil is become this like insane NFL story. He's made like straight up $70 million in the NFL. He'll make over $100 million by the time he turns 30. This is all from the guy that is number one representing himself for most of this. If not all of it, I'm not 100% sure. But also the guy at the gas mask, like I literally remember like one of my buddies showing up at my apartment in very early living in LA when Laremy Tunsil got drafted, like that insane story breaking, like all of us losing our minds over it. It's just crazy that Laremy Tunsil has ended up having this career with the amount of leverage that he's had. And also, like, I know we'll talk about skill position guys, but this is like having a star left tackle like this and a pretty decent right tackle too. That's going to be a great incubator for whoever they take at number two, the quarterback position there.
Right. I mean, once you get past quarterback, obviously the blindside quarterback, the blindside protector is as important as anything that you have on your roster. And, you know, Tunsil, you talk about him representing himself. I mean, maybe Lamar Jackson needs to inquire if Tunsil's available to do some
seriously
to do some, you know, negotiating on the side. Yeah, I remember when Tunsil came out his rookie year, and I forget. It's killing me. It's Al Toby who I'm thinking of, longtime NFL editor at Yahoo. He thought Tunsil had the chops to be the number one pick in that draft.
Yeah.
And had Tunsil not had the off-field stuff, maybe his stock doesn't go tumbling. But he's right now, what would you say, on a Hall of Fame trajectory? I think that's fair.
Well, he's definitely on Andrew Brandt's Business of Football Hall of Fame. That's for sure. He's going to be like a first jacket guy there, or first ballot gold jacket guy there. But yeah, I think so too, because he's been a top three player at this position. And I also think, Scott, the fact that like we're talking about him here with this, making this amount of money, and how much like that has been a public kind of story. And I also think the story with the gas mask too, like that was just nuts. Like that broke like when the first overall pick was on the clock, or it was, you know, very much like happening in real time. I think that story part of it and what he's been able to do afterwards is a big part of what's telling his story. So, you know, it would probably be great for him to eventually not play for the Texans, or for the Texans to be a little more relevant to make that Hall of Fame case. But I think the fact that he has been at like worst a top three player at his position, if not the very best left tackle in the NFL, I think that is a pretty good case for him to be a potential Hall of Fame guy down the line.
Yeah, maybe he's still, now that I look at his resume, maybe he still has work to do. He's made the Pro Bowl three of the last 4 years, and the one time he didn't was when he was hurt in 2021. He has not made first team All Pro, which is the type of thing you need to get to make Hall of Fame as, and look, I get it a lot of times with the offensive linemen. Now, this is changing with the data we have now. It felt like in a different generation, it was once you got in the conveyor belt of getting Pro Bowl nods, people just vote for the same guys. Now we have much more effective ways of measuring who the really good linemen are. So I think maybe I got a little bit too excited with Tunsil, that he probably needs a couple of Pro Bowl appearances, but whatever. Here's the bottom line. I mean, when you make up the list of left tackles that matter, he's on that short list. And Houston, we know, is going to be drafting their next quarterback, and you need to have that guy playing with confidence. You need to have that guy not looking at the rush. You need to be able to, you know, how many times you see a quarterback drafted to a bad team, they don't have a good offensive line, and maybe their pocket awareness isn't developed, and they get absolutely crushed. They get the confidence beat out of them. I don't think that'll be a problem. In fact, I thought last year, even when Houston wasn't a good team, I never thought the offensive line was what was holding them back.
The thing too, that Tunsil has a lot of time here to continue to build his resume. He's 28 right now. He'll turn 29 in August, actually August 2nd. He's a fellow August 2nd guy, just like myself. So that's interesting. Didn't know we had that little connection there, Laremy. But he will turn, But like by the time he hits 31, he'll be ready to hit free agency theoretically, or he'll be on a he'll be at the end of this current contract. So that, and that's 31 years old. Like for an offensive lineman, he could play for a long, long time, Scott. So I think he's squarely building up like on that. He's at least on that trajectory to potentially be a Hall of Famer, like you said. So I think that makes a lot of sense there for Laremy Tunsil. Yeah, what a just what an insane career he's ended up having after that gas mask incident. Like literally like somebody setting him up, sabotaging him in real time. That's some insane stuff. So shout out to Laremy Tunsil for that. As I mentioned, the Texans had a flurry, a mini flurry of signings here, like 5 minutes before we started taping. They signed Dalton Schultz to a one-year deal at tight end for up to $9 million, kind of on paper, the same contract that Mike Gesicki got. Tom Pelissero reported that. They also, according to Ian Rappaport, are signing Devin Singletary. I feel like you and I have talked about Devin Singletary an awful lot on this show. He's on a one-year deal as well, sort of a compliment to Damian Pierce. That means right now, Scott, the updated Texans depth chart with those two moves and with Brandon Cooks out the door, they've got Case Keenum slash likely rookie quarterback for their behind center. They've got Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary in the backfield. Robert Woods, Nico Collins, Noah Brown, John Mechie, a rookie last year that missed his entire season fighting leukemia at wide receiver, and Dalton Schultz at tight end. If I could have like painted a Houston Texans roster, a bunch of kind of like everybody kind of jokes that they're like they signed the guys that are like 75 to 78 overall in Madden. That's pretty much this team right here, with Nico Collins being the one guy that I still squint at as potentially having more upside.
I might like Damian Pierce a little bit more than you do.
You're right. Damian Pierce, you're right about that. That was my mistake to group him in with the vagabond veteran group.
I'll tell you what, you say those names, and I think this is a 6 or 7 win team. This is not a bad football team. Contender, no. And we'll see what they get. What route they go at quarterback, and if they get the right guy, and how quickly. Obviously, we've seen in recent years, we've seen some drafts heavy with quarterbacks, and then we've come out at the end of the season and really struggled to figure out what we just saw. We're still trying to figure out if Trey Lance can play. We may never figure that out, although of course he needs to stay healthy. But I don't dislike this team. And for fantasy purposes, usually when you have a team that isn't going to contend, and it would be a shock if they did contend in 2023, it's easy to write them off for fantasy. I think you can draft a few of these guys. They're not going to be the people who determine your league winning status. But yeah, last year I did the power rankings for fantasy teams, and I revisited it quarterly, and I'm pretty sure Houston was 32nd, 31st, whatever, 30th consistently. I mean, they should sneak up a tier, I think. I think this is going to be, I don't know. It's going to sound like I'm still damning them with faint praise. I'm going to have them 27th or 28th or something like that. But this does not sound like the worst offense in football to me.
I look at that receiver room, and again, I'm projecting a little bit of a jump from Nico Collins, maybe more than other people are, just because I think he has shown it his first 2 years. And, really right when he started to take off last year, when they kind of put Brandon Cooks in sort of the layup route role, and then Nico Collins is more of the vertical receiver, and he fits that like classic combative ball winning X receiver on the outside throwback sort of model. Right when they sort of flipped those roles is when Nico was sort of taken off, and Brandon Cooks was kind of starting to beef with the team a little bit at the trade deadline. He ended up getting injured. He had like a groin injury that bothered him the rest of the season. So if you project a little bit of growth from Nico Collins and like Robert Woods, I'm a little worried about that just because I think he was in decline prior to tearing his ACL with the Rams. But if Collins takes a step forward, Robert Woods is like 70% of the player he used to be, and John Mechie can get rolling here in what is essentially his rookie year, and then Dalton Schultz and those running backs are there. Like, I agree with you, it's not exciting, it's not sexy, but it's also not potentially embarrassing to throw like the second overall pick out there at quarterback and kind of let him swim and not sink in those waters.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. I don't think it's a train wreck. I think they'll be a better team next year.
And the team that is picking number one overall, I think is thinking that exact same way. Another piece of news we got over the weekend, Panthers added Adam Thielen on a 3-year deal, $25 million with $14 million guaranteed. Scott, to me, I like, number one, I like this move. I think from hiring from Frank Reich to this signing, pretty much everything the Panthers have done except the trade up to the first overall pick has been a little unexciting. But it feels kind of smart and steady. Two words I definitely would not have said about the Matt Rhule era. There are still some DJ Chark rumors out there, but my dream scenario for the Panthers is they take CJ Stroud at number one overall. That's, I've said on the podcast, that's the guy I like the most for that pick. And then they have the 39th overall pick, and then that selection's kind of bookmarked for a wideout, just like the Bengals did, pairing Joe Burrow first overall and T. Higgins in round two back in 2020. And I guess that would leave Adam Thielen to be the 32-year-old version of A.J. Green in that scenario. I guess my question to you, and really the point here with this signing, is like, how much do we think Thielen has left as a player?
Yeah, it turns 33 in August. That's just an age. I'm not drafting you anymore for fantasy, especially when you bake in a rookie quarterback and there's a decent chance that they'll add more, you know, whether it's through a trade or something on the draft. It's Thielen's going to have to be the boring like bench player for me. I will not draft him to be a starter. He'll be outside of my top 45 or so.
He probably would project in a similar range that Robert Woods projected in last year. Although I don't think their season would go like Robert Woods ended up being a ninth round pick that helped absolutely nobody. And every time you'd look at like the routes run data, you know, the technically the percentage of team target data, Woods would like pop up and like, oh, it's a name, you know, but the offense was just never there. I don't think the Panthers offense will be that kind of disastrous, nor will it be that run heavy with Frank Reich there. And I like Stroud, so I think that would be a natural fit. I think Thielen probably would be the favorite right now to lead the team in targets. But again, like we just said, how much is that worth? I think he brings more value to like the Panthers in a real life sense, ability to win in the red zone, third down. Like I don't think he's completely washed, I guess, based on charting a couple games of him this morning. But he's definitely a declining player that probably at best gives the Panthers like 1.5 decent years and is really more important to mentor a hopeful rookie receiver than anything else.
Yeah, I'll sign off on that. They added him almost as a quasi-assistant coach. I think it's actually really smart. I looked it up when he left Minnesota. I think he's number 5 all-time, Thielen is, in fantasy points for a wide receiver who wasn't drafted in the NFL, which is pretty impressive. It just shows what a self-made player he is. I wonder, this is anecdotal, but so much of his fantasy value has been baked into his winning in the red zone, his touchdown counts. And that, you know, speaks to being a very precise route runner, having a really good connection with Kirk Cousins. But into an age 33 season, you wonder if separation could be a bigger problem. He obviously has no rapport with the quarterbacks that he's going to be playing with now. He's starting from scratch, and it could be with a rookie. I do think they're going to take Stroud, by the way, and I agree he is the right pick. It just makes me nervous that this could be the lookout below season. But look, the market isn't going to draft Thielen aggressively either, so you can probably get him if you want him. He'll probably be there for your wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, something like that, kind of how the market played Woods last year. At least you can tell yourself a story that maybe Thielen owns some of that touchdown rate. I'm just nervous that he's changing teams at a time in his career arc that, the cliff seasons can often appear.
I wonder if he ends up, especially if they sign Chark, who I'm not that big a fan of DJ Chark. I'm not that big a fan of Terrace Marshall, but like these guys are perimeter vertical stretch receivers. I wonder if Thielen ends up going back into being like a power slot player, which he kind of was after when Stephon Diggs was sort of taking off there in Minnesota. And then right when he got traded, Thielen was in that big slot receiver role. I think that would actually kind of offset some aging concerns, the separation concerns potentially, but I do think that he can still probably be a decent red zone target. But again, Scott, we're talking about not the years where Adam Thielen was living off touchdowns and like he was getting 800, 900 yards and 10 to 12 touchdowns. We're talking about him potentially as like a 600 to 700 yard receiver that maybe scores like 7 touchdowns at best. So again, that's, what is that worth in fantasy? Probably like an 8th, 9th round pick, something like that, and more of a bench player. And I don't even know when you'd feel like, all right. We're guessing here that Stroud's the guy. I do think the Panthers, from an ecosystem perspective, they've got a pretty decent setup there with some of the like mid-tier signings they've made. Their defense is good, their offensive line is good, and they should have a good running game. So, 7 touchdowns for Thielen, that probably feels like a best case scenario.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Speaking of Panthers running game, the Bears were the anti-Texans in that they signed Donta Foreman for 1 year, $3 million, like 5 seconds after Dwayne McFarland and I stopped the last podcast when we must have mentioned Donta Foreman potentially going back to the Panthers a couple of times. He's with the Bears. They also signed Travis Homer for 2 years, $4.5 million. He's more of a passing down back. He's more of a special teamer. But for Foreman, he feels very samey to Khalil Herbert, who, you know, Scott, how this works. As soon as David Montgomery left the Chicago Bears equation, everybody on fantasy Twitter was rushing to, you know, wheels up for Khalil Herbert. My guy, Khalil Herbert. Look at Khalil Herbert yards after contact. Well, then Foreman signs there, and it's like, okay, well, how much of that is an overlap, or where does this leave the Bears backfield at this point?
Right, and tied to an offense where the quarterback's going to run for a lot of the rushing production as well, although a lot of that comes from outside of structure. I mean, Foreman, the fact that he signs a one-year deal tells you, and for such short money, it tells you that the Bears, I mean, they're playing the market here, but this is not a long-term plan. I was really surprised, actually, Homer got that deal, because you mentioned him as a pass-catching back. He's a pass-catching back. He doesn't catch a lot of passes. You know,
passing down back.
Right, yeah, he'd be in the field, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's you did couch that very skillfully. I feel like I chalk myself into Travis Homer in a deep league like once or twice a year, and it, you know, and then he plays and he gets like three touches. It's like, okay, I can drop him next week. don't play in a Charles Robinson 20-team fantasy football league. You'll just bash your head against the wall all season when you try to go to waivers and pick up running backs. But I'm not – look, you didn't need any help with Homer. I don't think anybody in this backfield is going to be anywhere near the top 25 next year.
Yeah, I think if Foreman hadn't signed there, Khalil Herbert would have been like everybody's favorite sleeper, and you would have been tweeting, you know, in the first few weeks of the season, you know, who liked Khalil Herbert? Everybody liked Khalil Herbert.
Yeah,
but
right,
now I think it becomes a legitimately interesting conversation. And last year it kind of went like Dave Montgomery 2 series, Khalil Herbert 1 series. I could see that now being Khalil Herbert 2 series, Dante Foreman 1 series, or vice versa. And that sounds like a mess on a team that we don't necessarily love the offense. And as you mentioned, the quarterback runs a lot. A little mini news roundup here before we get to our free agent winners. The Dolphins exercised Tua's 5th-year option. That was to be expected. The Raiders replace Darren Waller with O.J. Howard, who was a member of the Houston Texans last year, in case you forgot. And Nelson Aguilar is visiting the Ravens. Scott, I only added this one because, like, what a predictable Ravens receiver signing that would be. It's like, oh, who's the guy who was like definitely on his way out and not good with his third team? Oh yeah, sure. Definitely. He's a perfect Baltimore Raven as he enters the latter portions of his career. That would be like a classic Ravens signing if they sign Nelson Aguilar. And you know, that's what Lamar Jackson works with as this number 2 receiver if he's there next year.
Yeah. If Aguilar signs, I want them to pull out the John Travolta Pulp Fiction meme where he's looking around. He doesn't know where everybody is. You know, it's like, oh, Nelson Aguilar introduced to the Baltimore Ravens receiver room. He's like, oh, wait. Where is everybody? Because that's a very depressing, ugly receiver room. Get well soon, Rashad Bateman. And man, I don't know where they're going with Lamar Jackson. I'm sure you've already spent hours upon hours talking about him. And I mentioned him in passing earlier, but if that's how desperate they are, that they view Nelson Aguilar on, you know, he's on the back nine. He's on the 17th or 18th hole. He's just about done. He's putting out, you know, and he's ready to go have a nice club sandwich and a glass of iced tea or whatever. I will not be playing Nelson Aguilar next year, even after he invariably out of nowhere has a blow up game for 139 yards and a touchdown. You'll be like, Scott, you trust in Nelson Aguilar this week? I'll be like, no. And I have nothing. I usually talk too much. I'll be like, no, that's it. Next subject.
Pulp Fiction, you think I've seen it or not?
Of course you haven't.
Oh, incorrect. You're 0 for 2 this, but you're clearly out of practice with me, buddy. I was
50-50 on Ferris Bueller. I thought you might have seen that. I thought for sure you hadn't seen Pulp Fiction. In fact, I thought there's maybe like a 10% chance you hadn't heard of it.
You know what? I actually, I think I have a Ferris Bueller DVD on my little DVD shelf.
Really?
Over there, actually.
Have you seen any other Tarantino movies?
Probably, but you'd have to like.
Have you seen True Romance? Any of the Kill Bills? Jackie Brown? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No.
No.
Wait, what? Who? What was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
That was Leo and Brad Pitt.
No, I've seen the memes though.
It's a very long movie. It's a pastiche for sure. It's, you know, you could argue that Quentin misses his editor. By the way, Tarantino says he's going to make just one more movie and then he's going to retire. He thinks that movie directors work too long and they start running out of good ideas and he doesn't want to be that guy. So there might just be one more Tarantino movie for you to skip.
I mean, yeah, that's actually not wrong. I've seen Reservoir Dogs, though. I've seen Reservoir Dogs.
That's a Tarantino movie for sure.
And Django Unchained. Yeah, I've seen that.
And I mentioned True Romance. That's tangentially a Tarantino movie. He's related to that movie, but not directly. And he might even say, don't attribute that to me. but although True Romance is a very good movie, it's funny. I think Pulp Fiction is the best movie I've ever seen. It's not my favorite movie, but I do like it very much. But the Tarantino movie I've rewatched the most is Jackie Brown, which is a great take on 70s culture and the blaxploitation movies that Pam Grier was in. And the music's fantastic. Robert Forster is terrific. The cast is just great anyway. It's a long movie that doesn't feel like a long movie.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Hateful Eight, too.
Inglourious Basterds, yeah.
I haven't seen Inglourious Basterds, but I'm literally looking at, like, at the Arclight or one of the other, you know, highfalutin little movie theaters down here. I can't remember what it was now. I went to some like event for Hateful Eight at the theater. I'm looking at this like special thing I got from it. So I've got look at that, Scott. I've got some cultured here.
Hateful Eight wasn't a documentary about Sam Bradford's career.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, unfortunately it was not. Brett is literally slacking us or messaging us on the side and said, oh my God, what are we doing here? So it is time to move on.
Sorry. I knew that was going to happen.
We're going to do some free agency winners here, Scott. I might even let you touch on some losers on the way out since we have a different person on the losers episode later this week. But Scott, your first winner here that you have, and we'll just kind of kick back and forth. I have a few more than you, whatever. Rashad Penny. Probably the biggest fantasy winner of this whole process here in free agency, just from where he was to where he might be. Of course, might be is the key word with Rashad Penny. There are going to be wars fought between probably fantasy analysts and fantasy players who don't love to draft guys who have been injured previously, which, of course, you know, by the way, wipes out like the entire NFL. But Rashad Penny, where do you stand heading into this year?
Well, because I've held us back so much talking 20 minutes about the Texans and probably 15 minutes about Quentin Tarantino, I'll be quick with all these takes. Penny gets to be Miles Sanders.
Don't be quick, Scott. Don't be quick. You've got as much time as you need. Don't limit yourself.
I don't think there's much to say. Penny's a good back. He has to stay healthy, but you can say that about any running back. They're all injury risks. He steps into that offense, that infrastructure. It's a well-coached team, although they did lose something off the coaching staff. One of the best offensive lines in football. A dynamic quarterback who widens the defense against you. If all he needs to do, if you just told me Rashad Penny was going to play 13 or 14 games, I'd be like, I would make him a priority destination pick. He's ready to have his what Miles Sanders did last year, Rashad Penny is perfectly capable of matching.
I guess the question with that is, like, is Rashad Penny a better back than Miles Sanders? I think when he's healthy, the answer is probably yes. You know, I mean, even
it's close. That's a great question. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I think they're pretty darn close to even. I know that sounds like a cop out, but I'm not going to force a take if it's not there. I think it was very smart. This is so Eagles, right? And when it's time to pay Sanders, well, let's find a version of Sanders that won't cost us as much, and that's Rashad Penny.
Yeah, and look, they can still add a back in the draft. I feel like if you talk about any running back situation that's been affected by free agency right now, like, oh, Rashad White, he currently sits atop a depth chart with Chase Edmonds on it down there in Tampa Bay. Well, they could still draft a back. You know, oh, Tony Pollard, he's standing alone without Zeke Elliott in the Cowboys backfield. Well, I mean, hey, if any team could spend egregious resources on a running back, it's probably damn Dallas Cowboys. I think Rashad Penny, same thing. Like, they could take a back maybe on the late second day, maybe early day three, that renders this entire conversation irrelevant. But for right now, like, in terms of the early down banger role on that depth chart, Rashad Penny absolutely is clearly better than Kenny Gainwell and Boston Scott, who they brought back. I like Gainwell for what he is, but he's probably not a lead dog. Let's think about this right now, Scott. Again, early fantasy rankings. Where are you drafting Rashad Penny? Because the injury risk is there, and there will be at least 7 to 8 people in every fantasy league out there that is like, I'm never drafting Rashad Penny again. I've done that experience. Whatever. He's been injured. I got burnt. I don't like to play that way. I don't think people should play that way, but a lot of people do play that way. So where do you think he goes in drafts this summer, and where do you think you would feel comfortable taking him?
I think he probably is mostly a standard fifth round pick, and actually, I would consider him in that run.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair, and I guarantee you, there are is a handful of the audience that their ears just started to bleed here, hearing like Rashad Penny fifth round. If he tweaks a thing in the first 2 weeks of the season and you never see him again, it would be 0% surprising, right?
People forget how quickly the draft gets ugly. And go back to whatever leagues you're in, look at the fifth round, and look at how many players you lost trust with, or you cut, or they got hurt, or they fell in disfavor. The fifth round is an ugly round. I would think there's probably more misses than hits in any fifth round.
I mean, I totally agree with you. You know, you just look at, like, I'm looking back at drafts, you know, right now. Yeah, the fifth round, that is where things get pretty messy. We're talking about, like, that was, you know, I mean, Ramondre Stevenson was like not even a fifth round pick last year, and he ended up being a great pick. You know, Tony Pollard was like a sixth round pick. Things get weird around the fifth round. That makes a lot of sense. I like that there. And again, if he does stay healthy, he's going to score double digit touchdowns. He's going to rush for 1,000 yards in a great environment. So I love that there.
We also got to wonder one more thing about Philly. At some point, you have to think, as dynamic as they are when they run with Hurts, at some point they have to say, this guy's our long-term investment. We can't be exposed, especially if the NFL changes all those rules about the scrum and everything. At some point, it's just not worth it for him to score 15 touchdowns on the ground. It's a bad business idea, taking all those hits at the goal line.
Oh, yeah. I mean, totally. You would think that would be a part of the equation at some point. Yeah, again, I'm going back and I'm just looking at like the fifth round right now. It's Elijah Mitchell, fifth round pick pretty much last year. AJ Dillon, Antonio Gibson, you know, I mean.
I never heard of these guys.
Chase Edmonds was like a sixth round pick.
I wonder if the fourth round was just as bad. Maybe the point is that football's just gotten so hard now with the injuries and with the widening usage trees that maybe just it gets. I know last year a lot of first and second round picks busted too. So maybe our listeners are thinking, wait a minute, it's not just the fifth round, it's like any round. But I feel like the fifth round, there is a little bit of a shift. I feel like in past seasons, that's where I'm more willing to let my hair down and pick a guy that I feel uncomfortable with. Because it's just like, well, if there's an obvious pick, he'd be gone by now anyway.
Running backs going 40th to 60th overall in last year's drafts. Breece Hall, David Montgomery, Cam Akers, Elijah Mitchell, Josh Jacobs, shout out to you people out there, J.K. Dobbins, A.J. Dillon, Antonio Gibson. I mean, Antonio Gibson, 60th overall. So
a lot of red ink there, yeah.
A lot of red ink there. All right, my first winner here, actually, I'll go with a couple quarterbacks here to start. Justin Fields, obviously, I think is a winner. I don't think you'd disagree with me on that, just because of the DJ Moore trade. Kind of wish they had made some more moves on the offensive line. But they haven't. I think they'll probably save that for the draft. But getting DJ Moore, elevating that receiver room from, like I talked about, the Texans room is not embarrassing right now. The Bears receiver room was embarrassing last year with like Darnell Mooney and nobody, you know, trading for Chase Claypool. That didn't work out. DJ Moore, while I don't think he's an elite number one receiver, I think he's more of like a very good number one receiver, just below the great tier. That gives them a legit operation for Justin Fields to thrive in. I also think Joe Burrow's a big winner just because they get Orlando Brown. They probably upgrade that left tackle spot from Jonah Williams, who now wants a trade. These two quarterbacks in you know, a position that we've talked about, Scott, a lot on the show, we think quarterbacks are going to be rising in value. We think quarterbacks are going to be rising potentially in ADP next year. That was part of the big lessons learned episode. I think these are two of our big fantasy winners here from the free agency period. I mean, I just love the Bengals sitting there saying, we poured a lot of resources in the offensive line last year. We've got the Burrow extension coming. We got the Chase extension coming. Maybe we got Higgins coming up soon. We're not going to stand pat this offensive line. We're going to continue to make this unit better.
No, I definitely agree with both of those. And nice to see DJ Moore in a different team. And hopefully one of these years he'll get some touchdown luck because he hasn't had any of it in Carolina. And the Bengals are, the AFC is so deep and loaded with teams that are set up to contend for the next 5 or 6 years. But I really think the Bengals have another Super Bowl run in them. And I'm just looking forward to watching the Burrow to Chase and hopefully Higgins show for the next bunch of seasons. Give me season tickets to that.
Same here, man. And I think just, again, that offensive line fell apart due to injuries last year. Like, even if they have to keep Jonah Williams around, even if he's not happy, that's just depth, which is always a good thing to have. We talked about Mike Gesicki in the news. You actually have him as your winner here. I'm kind of curious what you think about all of New England's moves this offseason, Gesicki included, who signed a one-year deal up to $9 million to kind of replace Jonnu Smith's role in that offense. Hopefully a bigger role than Jonnu Smith had, but his position there on the offense.
Yeah, did we talk about Gesicki? I'm not sure if we did, but I like it. And it's, look, I As a Patriot fan, if anything, I probably skew towards the negative more than the positive when it's a 50-50 call. But Mike Gesicki's coming off a lost season because he didn't fit the Miami offense at all. And now he gets reunited with Bill O'Brien, who he has a past history with, and a team that's desperate for downfield playmakers, defined throws. I think Mike Gesicki can catch 80 balls next year. I love him. And, you know, he's got something to prove now after, again, being kind of left for dead in Miami. It just, he wasn't, if you don't fit an offense the way Gesicki didn't fit that offense, it doesn't matter how much he can try to be the tight end they wanted him to be. It just wasn't going to work out. I think everybody knew it. So, you know, he goes to somewhere he's wanted, somewhere where they know his talents. And I actually had, I know I'm not supposed to talk about losers this week because I initially said winners and losers. And turns out this is a winners only podcast. This is the Mike Singletary podcast. I want winners. But I have to like Juju less in New England.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean,
there's no split in the atom here. He's leaving the Andy Reid and the Patrick Mahomes story. Not that Juju was great last year, but I don't see anything about Mac Jones that makes him an escalator of other people's talents. Again, with Gesicki, it's just he's coming from nowhere. He's coming from ground zero, where Juju actually had some value last season. But I'd be surprised if Juju was anything inside the top 35 for fantasy purposes. I will not draft him proactively, but I will draft Mike Gesicki proactively.
Yeah, I was probably hoping for a little bit better of a landing spot for Mike Gesicki, because my big slogan this offseason with the tight end position is we need to restore the middle class. You know, that's how we get the cancel culture mob away from the tight end position, keep them in fantasy. I was probably hoping for a little bit better for Gesicki to join that middle class, but I can definitely squint and see how you'd have him here as a winner, Scott, for a couple of reasons. One, like, the Bill O'Brien factor, you know, he was with him in Penn State, recruited him to Penn State. There's familiarity there. But two, like I talked about Jonnu Smith leaving the team. While those guys are theoretically both like athletic, potential move tight ends, Gesicki is more of like a vertical player. Like he's going to get the ball down the field, up the seams, rip you that way. Whereas Jonnu Smith is more of like a, you get the ball in his hands and he kind of in like gadgety ways, he can make plays after the catch. None of that ever really happened in New England. Maybe it'll happen, you know, Smith and Smith reunited in Atlanta down there with Arthur Smith. But Mike Gesicki, I think, is more of like all these people that get on me about wanting to chart tight ends. Like Mike Gesicki is the most like actual wide receiver tight end in the NFL. And obviously New England is hurting for somebody to make more explosive plays over the field. Cause I'm with you that Juju is not an explosive player. Maybe more explosive after the catch than Mike Gesicki for sure. But like from a vertical standpoint, Gesicki gives them height and ability to win in areas that they have not had. Even as much as I like Jacoby Myers, he's not that big player that's going to make big plays down the seams either.
One thing we're always looking at for tight ends, especially like in the secondary and tertiary fantasy market, is tight ends who aren't asked to take out the trash. You know, tight ends who aren't blocking, tight ends who are used as slot receivers. And Gesicki's always been high up on that page. And also anecdotal, and it's not like I have a bunch of data. This is just something that hit the top of my mind as you were talking. I feel like the Patriots, and look, it's easy to pick on how many things they've missed on. Belichick, the head coach, has been kind of done in by Belichick, the GM at times in recent seasons. But I feel like when they've made moves inside their division, when they've gotten to see somebody twice a year, I think they've been really good about scouting those guys and deciding who to add. And so the fact that they've seen Gesicki a bunch, and I remember, I think you go back to that Ryan Fitzpatrick game when they won in week 17, back when week 17 was the final game of the season, they were gigantic underdogs. Shout out betting bro Frank Schwab. They were like 17 point underdogs. The Patriots needed to win. Tom Brady was still their quarterback. New England needed to get that first round bye, and Miami pulled the upset. Gesicki was a big part of that. And I just wonder if it maybe put a note in the back of the Patriots' minds that if this guy was ever available, he'd be good to get. Now, Gesicki maybe hasn't made a play in the NFL since then, but or it feels like it anyway, but he's going to have a bounce back season. I will have Mike Gesicki shares in the fall.
I like that call a lot. I also like that betting bros is starting to stick. That's a good thing. I'm glad also the first time I said it, I think I said the betting boys. I think the betting bros sounds a little bit better. It's fine. I think, Scott, I think it's fine when you call like your buddies, like, yeah, my boys, like, all right, let's get the boys and let's go out tonight. But if you like call people the betting boys or the whatever boys, I think that's like that doesn't have the same like punch to it. It's like, all right, let's get my boys and let's roll, or betting bros. Mm. That sounds a little bit better.
Well, Frank, you know, endorsed it when he referenced our NCAA piece last week. So, I'm all for the branding. Let's get it going.
If Frank endorses it, then we're in a good spot. I'll stick with the Patriots here. I think Ramondre Stevenson's a pretty big winner out of free agency. One, because, you know, they haven't added, as of yet, a guy that I think is a true needle mover in terms of a target earner. I like Gesicki. I like that signing. You've really convinced me into that. I like the move there. Juju, though, I don't think is a big-time target earner. He's had one real outlier season in terms of, you know, being fed a ton of volume. I think he'd be like a 17-18% target share type of guy. A good role player, but a role player. Ramondre Stevenson's value is mostly tied to the passing game. And then also, they bring in James Robinson, I think quietly one of the more eyebrow-raising moves of free agency. And I don't know that James Robinson, unless he makes an incredible comeback from this Achilles injury that, you know, set his career really off course, obviously, last year, I don't know that he's better than Damian Harris. And you know, Damian Harris, like, could be a legit thorn in somebody's side. I'm not sure James Robinson is that for Ramondre Stevenson. Where are you at with, in terms of Ramondre Stevenson? Do you think he's a winner? Do you think he's a guy that, you know, has potential staying power for like two consecutive years as a high-end fantasy back in New England, which we almost never see?
Well, I like it. He's hashtag good. And I realize people love to play that kind of tire trope of, oh, New England, you can't trust their backfield. Well, wait a minute. Stevenson just had a great fantasy season, and we're not that far removed from LeGarrette Blount scoring like 700 touchdowns in a fantasy season. They will play to their talent, and losing Harris, adding Robinson is just, that's the one way of them saying, because you have to go by what teams do and not what they say. They say things to us by what they do, and what they're telling you is that Ramondre Stevenson's going to be the featured guy. He'll be spelled by other guys because every team plays that way except for like two, but he's somebody I'll draft into proactively next year for sure. And don't get tripped up by these stupid Belichick narratives, because most of them aren't true.
Yeah, he's also like gone out of his way, bent over backwards to praise Ramondre Stevenson. Mm-hmm. He never really put him in like fumble jail or anything like that last year when that was like a concern. He didn't get, you know, banished to the shadow realm in the whole Raiders like end of game fiasco there with Jacoby Myers. So I think Ramondre Stevenson's a guy who's firmly
about that.
In the did you see Jacoby Myers' response to when getting asked that in his opening presser with the Raiders? I'm sure you haven't, because you're a normal person and you don't just consume football 24/7. Some reporter finally, like a decent bit into the press conference, asked him like, "All right, I'll be the guy." How do you, you know, started to ask him about the end of the game. And Jacoby Myers was like, thank you. Like, I appreciate you. Like, ask, finally, let's just get it out of the way. And then he gave a good answer about it and whatever. But I thought that was pretty funny that he was like, yeah, thank you. Let's get this over with.
I want to say this as a Patriots fan. I'll miss Jacoby Myers. Just a really thoughtful, interesting. I'm not surprised that he handled it that way. I mean, a lot of people would have been like, you know, the Bryce Harper clown question, bro, what are you doing? You know, would have cut the guy off, would have, you know, basically posterized him in, you know, press conference version of that. Myers isn't like that. Myers will listen to you. He'll be thoughtful. He'll give an answer crafted around what you asked him. He's one of my favorite Patriots and really smart. I know I talked about Thielen making his career out of nowhere. It's certainly what Jacoby Myers has done. No, you know, he wasn't drafted, right? I mean, nobody thought he was going to be somebody who stick in the NFL, let alone have fantasy value. And sad to see him go. I mean, he has a capped upside. I think we all know that, a capped ceiling, but he's still a good football player. And I think he'll have a solid year with the Raiders.
Yeah, love Jacoby Myers. I might talk about him here in just a second. But I'll also throw David Montgomery out there as a winner, Scott. I'm curious what you think about the Lions' move to go from a guy who I know you and I both really like in Jamal Williams. He goes to New Orleans. They move to David Montgomery as more of that, you know, maybe Jamal Williams role, although nobody's going to run as hot as Williams did at the goal line last year. But David Montgomery kind of going there, I do think that's a pretty big fantasy win for him just because, again, drink ecosystem. This is a good ecosystem in Detroit, and I think Dave Montgomery's going to a good one there.
It is like the play caller, like the offensive line, and we know, talk about capped upsides. DeAndre Swift has a capped upside, right? He needs, at least the Lions view him as that. Maybe if he ever changes teams, he'll get a role expansion, but he's not going to get in Detroit, at least the way they've handled him for several years now. So I would think a healthy Montgomery, I don't see how he doesn't score double-digit touchdowns, and I don't feel that many players you can say that about. I feel he's got 10 in the bank already.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good call, and the fact that he can play on passing downs is really important, too, for Montgomery. I always liked it during the season, your SAT thing with DeAndre Swift. Like, his touches are like 7, 8, 6, 5. The next number is not 28 or whatever, you know.
Although one week he did get like 19 out of nowhere. He broke the SAT.
Hey, I mean, Everything's all liars exist for a reason.
He went Will Hunting. He went Will Hunting on the SAT. Have you seen Good Will Hunting?
I have seen Good Will Hunting.
Good. Okay. That's all I'm going to say about movies. I'm done.
Yeah, you don't want to go on a 20-minute diatribe together about Ben Affleck movies or Matt Damon movies.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. I am looking forward to the Ben Affleck Nike movie. I think that's going to be pretty good.
I don't even know what that is. So
it's about Nike courting Michael Jordan. You've heard of Michael Jordan, right?
I have, yeah.
Basketball player. Baseball player. He's a baseball player, too. More known for his basketball.
North Carolina's second finest son after my father. Yeah, Michael Jordan.
I was going to go Julius Peppers first, but okay. Yeah, your dad. Your dad's up
fine,
there.
Fine. Hal Harmon, Julius Peppers, Michael Jordan. I don't think
Peppers played big time college basketball and college football at the same time. That's pretty sweet.
He was a freak. And one of the guys, I love this in sport. I'm a sucker for guys. This makes no sense. It's stupid. I know it makes no sense from like a business perspective. I love when guys play their entire career with one team. I almost love it even more when they journey out and then come back home like Julius Peppers did. I'll also never forget Julius Peppers, his first game back in Carolina, his first year with Chicago. That was the very first Panthers game I ever went to, and he absolutely stuffed them in a locker, and like they won that game with Todd Collins somehow throwing like zero touchdowns and three interceptions. The worst football game to ever play. Don't go look at the Pro Football Reference page about that, but I witnessed that game in person, and it's no wonder I'm not actually really seriously a Panthers fan anymore.
It's cool when you watch a football game and everybody knows that one defensive player just absolutely dominated it. Sometimes it's more overt. You know, think of people like Lawrence Taylor, Aaron Donald. I'm still mad that in one of the Patriots' losses to the Giants in the Super Bowl, Justin Tuck didn't win the MVP the first time they played, because that whole game was getting under Brady's feet and beating him with a four-man rush, and Justin Tuck was at the forefront of that. But yeah, Peppers could do that, where no matter your level of sophistication, you're just like, oh man, they couldn't block that guy.
Somehow we got Julius Peppers, you know, Ben Affleck. Scott,
I love it. Julius Peppers, movie. Man. Yes, that's what the people want. They want Tarantino. They want Julius Peppers. That's why you bring me in. They want betting bro references.
All while saying like, oh yeah, David Montgomery. That's what we were talking about. So that's good stuff.
We gave them the take. Hey, we gave them the two thumbs up on Montgomery. There's fantasy value here. There's fantasy intel being dispensed. I'll give you some more fantasy intel. I'm going to draft Dak Prescott next year because Zeke out. Cooks in, the distribution of touchdowns we talked about is going to have to be heavier towards the pass. Prescott is still at an age where it's theoretic that he hasn't had his best season yet. He doesn't run as much as he used to, so maybe it might not be his best fantasy season because that rushing production's not, that toothpaste isn't back in the tube. But I still think the Cowboys have a Super Bowl run in them, man. Give me Dak Prescott next year.
I love this, and there's going to be a stink on Dak because of the way the season ended last year. You know, all of the arguments about, oh my God, Dak, he's actually bad. He led the NFL in interceptions with 15. Oh, how dare you throw 15 interceptions? I'm old enough to remember when Jay Cutler would like lead the NFL in interceptions every year with, you know, like 20 plus, or Jameis did it with 30 plus, something like that. Dak leads the NFL.
I miss that Jameis. I miss that version of Jameis. I'd love to have it back.
Does any team have more personality at its backup quarterback and theoretical backup running back position than the New Orleans Saints in Jamal Williams and Freudian slip there, Jamal Williams and Jameis Winston? That's pretty incredible in terms of personality.
Who knows? Maybe Alvin Kamara will be the backup.
I know.
Man. Tough time. By the way, he was going to be one of my losers with the pending suspension issue, and he's got no. We knew he didn't have a lot of touchdown equity anyway. When you sign Jamal Williams, you're basically saying Alvin Kamara, you're going to score three touchdowns next year.
So Dak Prescott last year, 5.8% touchdown rate. I think that's going up. He was at 6.2% the year prior. 5% in his 30 touchdown year in 2019. Obviously, he was like setting the world on fire from a yardage perspective in 2020. But yeah, again, like I look at this receiver core right now. If Michael Gallup can get back to his old form, I know that's an if. I know that's a concern. I just really like Gallup as a player, and I've done a lot of work on with reception perception data on the first year after an ACL tear. Almost all of these guys struggle to get open at the same rate. Cooper Kupp was one. Julian Edelman actually throws off my sample weirdly. Scott, you'd find this interesting just because Patriots stuff, but like every single guy, if I go through this spreadsheet I have, it's like, yep, lost 5%, lost 4%, 3%, lost 7%. Some of these guys, like Allen Robinson, first year off an ACL tear. And then Julian Edelman somehow gained like 5% his ability to get open after an ACL tear, which was interesting. So
the other player who screwed up ACL tear analysis was Adrian Peterson, who came back from it and won an MVP award. You know, not that I would have voted for him, because, you know, how can your MVP be a running back in the NFL today? But that made people think, oh, it's not really a big deal. No, we just saw like a once in a lifetime occurrence.
I just think generally sports, I actually saw an interview on Twitter between Pat McAfee and JJ Watt, where like they're talking about how basically sports have ruined injury, like the way we perceive injuries forever, because it's like, oh, this guy, it tore his ACL, he'll be back in 9 months or whatever. But it's like, that is that like 4 month process at the very beginning of that. Anybody who's ever actually like had surgery, especially like a knee surgery, or like my wife has had hip surgery, stuff like that, like it's a grueling, brutal process. Like the fact that Michael Gallup struggled to get open last year, it's like, well, no shit, he struggled to get open last year. He had tore his ACL and had surgery in February, came back, missed week one, whatever. So again, I think Gallup, I'm going to mention him a lot on the podcast for people that probably be sick of it by the time the season starts. I think he's a key to this, because if Gallup is healthy and Brandon Cooks cleanly transitions from the player that he was in Houston just last year, I think Dak has the best receiver core he's ever had, because CeeDee Lamb, I think, is a better player than Amari Cooper was at his peak. I think Brandon Cooks could be a better player than rookie year CeeDee Lamb. And again, if Michael Gallup's back to his old form, Michael Gallup, that's there from 2020 when Dak was tearing it up. I think this could easily be his best season yet. Dak Prescott there with the
Dallas Cowboys. Agreed. Just to put a period on this, I ask you, dear listener, how old, don't answer yet, how old is Michael Gallup? Think of a number in your mind. He just turned 27 in March.
Yeah.
I think he's probably a year or two younger than a lot of people realize. So, and even this would just be a case of, he doesn't have to even be fantasy viable, as long as he's viable, as long as he's somebody who threatens the field in different strata and complements the route combinations that they want to run with Lamb and Cooks and whatever they do at tight end, although they have some holdovers there. You know, obviously Pollard is a dynamic running back. Hopefully he'll get back to 100%. He can be a really important part of this offense, even if it doesn't necessarily translate to fantasy value. So I think I'm going to buy a Dallas Cowboys futures ticket when we finish this pod.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Your fellow betting bro, Frank Schwab, he's always too high on the Cowboys, so he'll be ready to join that with you. And look, I knew they lose Dalton Schultz at tight end, but they always, like, Dalton Schultz was the rando day three draft pick that just turned
into a
starter.
They'll find another Schultz. They'll find another version of him.
Jake Ferguson will just be Dalton Schultz, maybe potentially better next year, the guy they drafted last year. So I like that call. I'll throw a couple other winners out here, and then we can get out of here. I had Chris Olave as a winner. I think that's kind
of
obvious.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. I also have all of the Raiders pass catchers are winners, similar to the same thing with Chris Olave. Like, I know that there are going to be people out there that, because Andy Dalton was like a PFF wonderkin last year, darling, whatever. I just combined those two words together because there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think Derek Carr is probably at least as good as Andy Dalton was last year, if not better. It was the best thing that they possibly could have done for Chris Olave. I also think Jimmy Garoppolo is a best case scenario for Davante Adams, for Hunter Renfro, for a guy Jacoby Myers, who we just mentioned. And also, I think Darren Waller is a winner going to New York and leaving Las Vegas. I'm actually most curious what you think about Waller there, Scott. Is he a guy that could potentially help us restore the middle class at tight end?
I mean, they could certainly use help in their pass catching room. And Waller, he's at an age we worry about a little bit, but because he played so little in the early part of his career, maybe the mileage isn't as big of a deal as we think. So I'm open-minded to Waller. I do think what they did with Jones is sustainable. I'm glad to see him come back. And you know, given that the Raiders gave up Carr without a definitive succession plan in place, I think getting Garoppolo is about as good as they could have expected. Yeah, and Jimmy Garoppolo can play. The problem with him is always how many games you're going to get. And he can handle the city. You know, he'll win the press conferences. He's obviously got a history with McDaniels.
Good does he look in that all black? Have you seen the picture?
He looks really good.
Incredible.
He looks really good. I'm comfortable enough in my manhood to say that. He looks really good.
Incredible.
Look, all we want teams to be is interesting, right? They don't have to be good or bad. The Raiders will be interesting. They'll probably be like a 7-10 interesting, but I'll take that.
And I think they could still take a Will Levis or an Anthony Richardson, a guy that you might want to sit at the top of the draft.
That's a great idea for sure.
And I don't know that I would love like Davante Adams fantasy projection with Anthony Richardson, because he's a guy that would probably bring down the pass attempts and run a decent bit. But like, again, if in the situation where Jimmy Garoppolo misses time, probably not the worst thing in the world to just have like a highly talented rookie waiting in the wings.
Have you picked an ideal Richardson landing spot yet?
It's tough. I think if you are the type of person who believes that Anthony Richardson isn't as, and I know there are folks out there and I want to get them on this podcast at some point. We'll have Charles McDonald on the podcast. He'll break this down a ton for us, but there are definitely folks out there that think he's not as far along, like, or not as far off from playing as people think. If you're one of those folks and you want to see him play right away, you want him in Indianapolis because he's a guy that they could form an offense like Jalen Hurts was in his first year. I know this was a different coaching staff. This was Doug Peterson and the boys, but even the offense that Shane Steichen and them put together in their first year in Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts, they could do a lot of that with Anthony Richardson. And they have a legit, I think, number one receiver in Michael Pittman to throw to. They have Jonathan Taylor. They have a jump ball specialist like Anthony in Alec Pierce. Anthony Richardson's got a hose, man. Like throw jump balls to Alec Pierce, throw jump balls to Michael Pittman, you know, throw five crossing routes to Michael Pittman a game. He can make stuff happen. And they have a good run game there with Jonathan Taylor and Shane Steichen as the head coach. I think that's probably my favorite fit. Also, I just have no idea what the hell Indianapolis is going to do at the quarterback position, if not that.
Wow, you sold me. That sounded really good. I Anthony Richardson and the Colts, let's do it. Was Charles in on Richardson being ready quicker than expected? Was that his pick?
We haven't. I've just kind of talked to him a little bit about it on the side. I think so, but don't quote me on that.
I'll look forward to that future show. I mean, I'm so glad he's on the Yahoo team. We got him last year, one of our best moves of the season, because he's such a smart NFL guy. We got two Charleses who are great follows in the NFL, but I'll look forward to that show. But yeah, I can't wait to see what Richardson does as a pro. And I'm bullish on him.
Well, hey, Scott, when was the last time you and I got too excited about the Indianapolis Colts? Definitely wasn't.
Oh, God, yeah. I said they would clinch the NFC South around Thanksgiving. I didn't say they'd clinch it and win it. I just said, you know, actually, I did say that. But, man, were they a train wreck last year? They're a team that, like, if they had not played their last three or four games, nobody on Sunday would be like, hey, wait a minute, where's the Colts game? We just wouldn't have missed them.
Well, yeah, at least they got mildly interesting around the middle of the year when their owner fired the head coach and hired a guy off the ESPN set. So that was
and then
about
they blew a 98-point lead at Minnesota on a standalone Saturday game, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. What a disaster the Colts season was. So, yeah, I think Anthony Richardson getting in there and being a guy who I think Charles had Nate Tice on UPod to win the game, our NFL podcast here. I think they talked about Anthony Richardson on that show, so that would be worth going back and listening to. Cool. And again, we'll talk with Charles about this on upcoming podcasts. We'll talk about a lot of stuff, of course. But hey, Scott, I will let you because you snuck in and I kind of teed you up a little bit on the Alvin Kamara thing by mentioning Jamal Williams. Since you snuck in your two losers that you had here, Juju, Alvin Kamara, give us your third loser, because I will always, always leave space on this podcast for somebody to take shots at Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I don't want to be too hard on him. I mean, the guy did step into the Rams locker room late in the season and play okay. I think a lot of times he's been let down by the pieces around him. But now your Tampa Bay offense is either Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask. Good luck with that. The NFC South is bad anyway. Nobody really looks like a good team to me, although I guess you could squint and talk yourself into the Saints. The Falcons, I feel like, aren't close to being good. Carolina, obviously, they're going to have a rookie quarterback. That means you're starting over, but Tampa Bay is going to be really bad next year, and I'm going to avoid – I can't see myself drafting any of their players.
Yeah, I agree, man. I have no idea what to expect from the Bucks right now. Like, they're just in such a weird spot. And it's a shame because they have Chris Godwin, they have Mike Evans, two receivers I really like, and I can't imagine drafting those guys too often.
Although it was a hell of a trick for – not that Brady played that great last year, but somehow Mike Evans went 11 straight weeks without a touchdown, which is – on a team that didn't have the widest usage tree either. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, everybody else is scoring, not Mike Evans. Like, well, no, that was really depressing. And I'm kind of glad. Although Brady, I still think Brady in San Francisco would have been fascinating. But other than that, I'm kind of glad he retired.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, all right, that is going to do it for us. Scott, tell the people what you got going on right now. Probably not so much in the football universe, but I know you got a lot of other things, a lot of other irons in the fire as well.
Yeah, a lot of fantasy baseball. We're doing group content. We're doing individual content. I'm also part of the Circling the Bases podcast on Roto World with DJ Short. So I hope you check that out. In addition to the exciting new podcast that Matt teed up on Yahoo early on. I'm so psyched that Ball Don't Lie is coming back. Those guys are great. And obviously the Kaiser show is going to be great too. So I hope you check those out. But a lot of baseball. And I think Frank and I might be doing some more NCAA basketball betting stuff before the tournament is over, although neither one of us had a great week one. I want to be transparent about that. But and then not the Masters isn't far off. I'm hoping Busby and I, the great Jay Busby, who could write about anything, I'm hoping we do our yearly Masters piece. That's just a couple of weeks away. So a lot of different things. We're juggling a lot of different sports over here, and I'm happy for it.
Hell yeah, man. I'm definitely going to check out some of the Masters stuff that you do with Jay, and the people should absolutely check out the anything the betting bros do together. You better bookmark that. Well, Scott, I know we will have you back on the podcast sooner. There will not be as much of a gap between your appearances here of late. We are super busy. I don't want to keep you too busy with this podcast, but we'll get you back here in a couple of episodes. In the meantime, if you don't already, make sure you're following at @Scott_Pienowski on Twitter. You can also, if you dare, you can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And of course, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy for all of the great things the group is putting out right now. I'm going to be back late Thursday with an electric guest for our Free Agency Losers episode. Very, very. We're going to bring all the good vibes we had today. We're going to bring it all the way down. Until then, we're out.